Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC, and we begin today with the New York City Police Commissioner Ray Kelly on the day after the Boston Marathon attack. Commissioner, thanks very much for giving us a few minutes. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Good to be with you.
We just saw in the news conference up there where Police Commissioner Ed Davis said it is the most complex crime scene in the history of the department in Boston. Can you reflect on what they must be doing right now, what they must be going through?
Well, I think what they're doing is doing a grid search, a very detailed grid search, to see if there's any trace evidence perhaps several blocks away. I think also important in this is to look at cameras. I think he alluded to that. Businesses were closed yesterday because it was a holiday in Boston. Now businesses will be open. They'll have much more access to security cameras that are in these businesses. So I think that's part of the search, part of the grid search. There were two bombs. Obviously, the immediate location of those bombs will be examined in detail. There are FBI bomb technicians, ATF technicians who are, I'm sure, have combed that area already and have either done or will soon be in the process of doing analysis of material found in the immediate area of the bomb. So it'll take a while. These are sort of painstaking, laborious processes that they have to go through.
Are you consulting Boston officials in any way?
We have our police officers there. We have a team of officers there. We have a very close relationship with the Boston Police Department. They're members of our Century program. We have a lot of communication and cooperation with them.
Do you have any information or thoughts on who did this and why?
Well, if I did, I really can't say publicly. It's not appropriate for me to speculate. Information that comes out as far as this investigation should come out from the law enforcement authorities in Boston. I would be doing them a disservice if I started to speculate. I mean, there's people who are outside of law enforcement who can do that, but if you're in one of these jobs, it's not appropriate to speculate. So I'm going to wait for them to make public comments.
And what's different around New York City today? What do people need to know?
Well, we have a increased police presence, uniform presence in the city. We have been targeted here 16 times since September 11th. We've had three individuals arrested in the last 6 months for plotting against New York. We see ourselves as a consistent target. And we have responded, certainly the administration has responded, by investing heavily, certainly with federal resources and federal help, in protecting the city from a terrorist event. And you're going to see some of that today. And you saw it yesterday as well. We have increased uniform presence and some things, of course, that the public won't see. Now, I believe we've done more and are doing more than any city anywhere to protect ourselves because of our track record. We know that we are in the crosshairs, and we know that they will continue to want to come here and hurt New Yorkers. So that's our operating premise, and New Yorkers will see some of that today.
There's been no successful plot against New York since 9/11. Despite the large number of attempts that you just mentioned, largely to your credit, was there a failure of security or intelligence in any way in Boston?
Oh, I'm not in a position to say that. Best of my knowledge is there was no advance warning at all. I mean, that's what the intelligence community is telling us. There was no indication, no so-called chatter, as you know, we've heard referred to in previous plots. So, I don't see any indication of that. There's no guarantees. We've invested a lot. Other cities have as well. But certainly, there's no certainty in this business. We had Faisal Shahzad, who drove right into the middle of Times Square on May 1st of 2010, and attempted to detonate a bomb. In fact, did detonate it, but it didn't work. So, you know, he was on nobody's radar screen. We try, we do our best, but certainly can't guarantee safety.
A marathon must be such a difficult thing to provide security for because it's all so open and spread out over such a wide area. How do you do it in New York?
Well, you're right. I mean, 26 miles, just by definition of a marathon, you have lots of space there where things could happen. But, you know, particularly at the end here, this was pretty well thought out. It was, you know, well after the finish, those professional runners crossed the finish line. And most people are, you know, these are people who usually run marathons before. They're running about 4 hours, 4 hours and 30 minutes, that sort of time frame. So this race started at 10 o'clock. So it was, you know, roughly 10 o'clock. So this was 2:45 when the 2:50 when the bombs went off. So you sort of had your maximum number of people at the finish line, and it was aimed at causing a maximum amount of casualties. So it's very difficult, as you say. You rely to a large extent on intelligence information. Apparently, in this instance, there wasn't any. But you're right, covering a major sporting event, a major event, is very difficult. We put in what we call a counterterrorism overlay anytime we have, you know, large numbers of people gathering. Certainly the New Year's Eve celebration is, you know, indicative of that. But we have a lot of other events in the city where significant numbers of people gather. We try to increase our coverage, certainly have our ear to the ground as far as potential attacks are concerned. But, again, we can't totally guarantee safety in our post-9/11 world.
Let me play you one clip of the Boston Police Commissioner, Ed Davis, from that news conference a few minutes ago, discussing the need for information from anyone who has anything.
There have to be hundreds, if not thousands, of photographs or videos or observations that were made down at that finish line yesterday. And they're sitting out there amongst everyone that's watching this event this morning. And I would encourage you to bring forward anything. You might not think it's significant, but it might have some value to this investigation.
Anything, even if you don't think it's significant. So they may get a lot of stuff that they have to sift through, a lot of, you know, chaff to find perhaps a piece of wheat. Is that the same approach that you would take or have taken in the past?
Well, each case is different, but I think that premise is correct, that, you know, virtually everybody has a cell phone with a camera these days, and this was a celebratory event, if you will, up until the bombing. So people were taking pictures of individuals, you know, crossing the finish line or in the race, and I think it's a, you know, a reasonable thing to do. They ask people if they see anything on their, you know, in their pictures that are suspicious that can help in the investigation. Now, granted, it's going to be a, you know, it's going to be a difficult process to going through probably all of the material that they're going to get, but I think it's a necessary one, and I think it's a wise request on the part of Ed Davis.
Last question from me. Does New York have extra security around this time of year anyway? Just that tax day is April 15th. The April 19th Waco and Oklahoma City anniversary sometimes brings up anniversary stuff from a certain group. It's Hitler's birthday, the 19th, even. April 18th was the U.S. Embassy bombing in 1983 in Lebanon. Does the city ramp up annually for any of those reasons?
Well, let me say this. We are very much aware of anniversaries. No question about it. Generally speaking, terrorist events have not been driven by anniversaries. You know, this may, in fact, be an exception. We'll have to see at the end of this investigation. But we're very cognizant and very mindful of anniversary dates. But it is not, let's say, Al-Qaeda. Not that I'm ascribing anything to any group at this time, but we have not seen their acts overseas driven particularly by certain dates. They basically say when you're ready to do it, you do it, as opposed to being driven by a particular point on a calendar.
So I think we see Benghazi probably had an anniversary hook, and so did Timothy McVeigh, right?
Well, yeah, but I mentioned Al-Qaeda, and, you know, that general mindset that comes from them is that if you are ready to do it, you do it, as opposed to maybe forcing the action by a particular date. But you can't say that one size fits all in this business. We have to be flexible. We have to, try to foresee, which is difficult to do in this business.
Did that last answer about Al-Qaeda indicate you think that that's probably where the investigation will wind up?
No, I didn't want to say that. I'm just saying, when we look at the sort of a broad panoply of terrorist events, the intelligence community believes that Al-Qaeda and Al-Qaeda-driven events are generally not driven by a particular date or anniversary, rather preparedness of the actor or actors to pull off a particular event.
Anything else you want to say to our listeners that I didn't ask you about?
Well, I would say there's no specific threats against New York City, but, we've certainly increased our coverage and vigilance, and we ask the public to be vigilant as well, to look at their world through the prism of 9/11, as we say. Everybody's life has changed to a certain extent as a result of those attacks, and we just ask them to be vigilant and to feel free to call our TIPS hotline or 311 if they see something of a suspicious nature. There's no dumb call. There's no stupid call. We want to hear from people.
Police Commissioner Ray Kelly, thank you so much for giving us this time this morning. I really appreciate it.
Okay, Brian. Thank you. Bye.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And listeners, anyone listening who was running in the marathon yesterday, please call in and share your experience. You're welcome to share your experience, and you can talk about your feelings today, too, if you were up there. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Or, of course, you can always post to our website at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. I know there were hundreds of people from New York and New Jersey running. Our news department was reporting earlier the exact number, which I don't have in front of me. There are registration figures, and plenty of New York and New Jersey runners were up there, lower Connecticut runners as well. And any people from around here who just want to express solidarity with the people of Boston, or anything else you want to say or to ask, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Our next guest is Jessica Stern, a fellow at the FXB Center for Health and Human Rights at the Harvard School of Public Health, served on President Clinton's National Security Council staff in 1994 and 1995. Jessica Stern, thank you very much for giving us a few minutes. I know you've been doing a lot of Boston media over the last day, so thanks for coming on WNYC.
Sure. I think you do great service, so of course.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. And what's it like for you just to be a Bostonian today, not to mention with a connection to the issue?
Well, of course, it's very painful. It's nothing like the 9/11 strikes, but nonetheless, it reminds us of that. And it was a day that we were all celebrating, and suddenly it turns into a day of horror. So, yes, it's a hard day to be a Bostonian.
Who could have done this? I know everybody's wondering, and of course, officials are warning us all to be very slow to jump to conclusions, which is the right thing to do. There's a history of right-wing groups attacking on this week in April, and Tax Day and Patriots Day make you look in that direction, maybe. And yet, as one marathon runner friend said to me last night, many ex-military people run marathons, so a so-called Patriot Movement person might not want to hurt them. Also, Al-Qaeda has encouraged lone wolf attacks, not coordinated through any international clearinghouse, just people with their views to stage individual attacks against the United States. So who knows? But are you seeing any evidence of what's emerging that would lead you to come to any kind of suspicion more than what Police Commissioner Kelly felt free to say out loud?
Well, I was surprised that Commissioner Kelly, who is so remarkable, didn't want to agree with your supposition that sometimes terrorists strike on anniversaries. I do think that especially for anti-government American groups, this is a very important week, and we have seen many attacks on the anniversary, Patriots Day. Patriots Day is celebrated on the third Monday of April in Boston. It has been since the late 60s. So it's not this year on April 19th, but it is our Patriots Day, and it is the date in 1985 when there was a siege at the Covenant, the Sword and the Arm of the Lord, a group that I've studied in great depth, but is not as well known as other attacks that you mentioned, the Waco assault and the Oklahoma City bombing. And Hitler's birthday is April 20th, and April 15th is tax day.
20th, so I mistakenly said 19th earlier, so thank
it
you.
Was, and Columbine was planned for the anniversary, Hitler's birthday. So This is an important week for American terrorists. You're absolutely right that this also could be a group acting, a group or an individual acting allegedly on behalf of the Al-Qaeda movement. Al-Qaeda has been encouraging individuals to take action on their own in America. Don't go to Pakistan to get trained. Don't go to Yemen. Stay at home. And they're publishing articles in Inspire magazine about open source jihad, how to make a bomb in the kitchen of your mom, how to carry out attacks on your own.
So all these things are possible. And, of course,
all these things are possible.
We want to, in being slow to jump to conclusions, remember the Olympics bombing in Atlanta in 1996, where authorities quickly arrested security guard Richard Jewell. They actually thought they had a suspect and falsely accused him for a long time. Only much later did that other guy, was his name Eric Rudolph? Become the prime suspect, so we all have to go slow here. I also think of Salman Hamdani, killed at the Trade Center on 9/11 and identified by authorities posthumously as a suspect, and only later did they identify him as a first responder trainee who rushed to the scene to help before the towers collapsed. So we definitely have to go slow. I also want to add to this conversation now Erwin Redlener, director of the National Center for Disaster Preparedness at the Columbia University Mailman School of Public Health. Professor Redlener, thank you very much for coming on today.
Happy to be here, Brian, on a really kind of a terrible aftermath day, but happy to talk to you.
Absolutely, a terrible aftermath day. And, you know, from what I could tell yesterday, first responders of various types did an amazing job. They stopped the race and diverted thousands of runners who were still on the course. They moved people near the finish line away from the blasts very efficiently and seemingly calmly. The hospitals that were involved scrambled their mass trauma disaster plans very efficiently from everything that I heard. So as an expert in emergency response, would you give this very high marks?
Yeah, they get an A for yesterday. I mean, this is one of the things that's definitely evolved in a positive direction since 9/11 in that our first responder systems have gotten very, very good. And I think that would be the case in most American cities right now. And besides that, we saw another example of extraordinary stepping in by ordinary citizens, so people who were there witnessing the race, some medical personnel, but lots of lay personnel who really did what they had to do. They took care of injured victims. It was amazing. It's heroism, individual action, situational awareness, and a very competent response system. All of that was really, all things considered, pretty effective.
Professor Stern, the FBI described the investigation as a criminal investigation that could become a terrorist investigation. Why did they make that distinction? Jessica Stern?
I don't really know, other than that they don't want to jump to conclusions. And, I mean, that's just what we keep hearing from, you just heard it from Commissioner Kelly. We're hearing it from officials, every kind of official in Boston. So
I guess since we know that somebody planted two bombs, that seems to be pretty well established. What would be criminal but not terrorism about that? Or are they just being so super cautious that even in the light of those facts, they don't want to use the word?
Well, let me give you an example of I actually called a member of the Montana militia. I often try to call people who come from groups that one might imagine could be involved. And I asked him what he thought about what happened in Boston yesterday. And he said he thought it was most likely someone who was angry, who didn't make it the cut to get to run. Now, I have no idea whether there's, it's just sheer speculation, of course, but it could be someone who had something against the store
I understand. So that kind of criminal retribution, if it was potentially something like that, would be a crime but not terrorism.
Right. It could be, yes.
Go ahead. Yes, Professor Redletter.
Yeah, I'm just going to add, Brandon, the thing about this is whether it turns out to be a lone wolf, somebody with a serious psychiatric problem or an actually organized act of official terrorism, it has certainly resulted in terror in the sense that heightened alertness, and this has become an international story. There is a consequence that goes beyond Boston. It's not just an issue of, a terrible crime being committed in Boston. This is actually something with large-scale ramifications, including the fact that, just to even bring this point in, we happen to be in the middle of the federal budget negotiations, and there's been a lot of cutbacks in Homeland Security issues. And I'm sure whatever this turns out to be, ultimately in terms of culpability, it's going to be a consequence that may result in either some change in priority in the federal budget. So there's impact here. It's widespread. It's an act of terror, even if it doesn't fit the official sort of FBI definition of terrorism in that sense.
All right. And we thank Jessica Stern from Harvard. We thank Erwin Redletter from Columbia. Thank you both very much for giving us a few minutes today. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. There was a news conference just before we went on the air, and I want to play one clip of Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick, who seems now to have eliminated the idea that there could have been any more explosives than actually went off.
It's important to clarify that two and only two explosive devices were found yesterday. All other parcels in the area of the blast have been examined, but there are no unexploded bombs. So there were no unexploded explosive devices found. Over 150 people were injured yesterday in the blast, some gravely. Our thoughts go out to all of those injured and killed and to their families and friends.
We'll continue in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.
Our mission is clear: to bring to justice those responsible for the Marathon bombing. The American public wants answers. The citizens of the city of Boston and the Commonwealth of Massachusetts want and deserve answers. This group of dedicated men and women standing before you today pledge to do everything possible to get those answers.
FBI Special Investigator Rick DeLaurier at that news conference a short time ago, and Brian Lehrer with you on WNYC. We'll take some calls in just a minute as we bring in a Christian Science Monitor reporter, Allison Terry, who is in Boston. Allison, thank you for giving us a few minutes here in New York today. Thank you very much for coming on.
Sure, no problem.
You know, I'm aware of Patriots Day mostly through baseball. Some years, mm-hmm. The Yankees play the Red Sox there, and an 11 a.m. morning game, which I'm pretty sure is the only morning game I've ever heard of in Major League Baseball and happens in Boston every year. Yesterday, the Red Sox played someone else, and the game was over before the attack. But can you tell our New York listeners a little bit about Patriots Day, a holiday that we don't have in the rest of the country?
Sure. I actually didn't know too much about it before moving to Boston. I've been here about a year. Patriots Day celebrates the first fight of the Revolutionary War. It's the fight in Lexington and Concord where we had the shot heard around the world. And so it celebrates that idea of patriotism and the founding of our country and many people in Massachusetts, and it's a holiday in Maine as well, really revere it. And it's a day to celebrate the birth of our nation, but also happens to fall on the same day as the Boston Marathon. And it's usually just, from what I understand, a day of big celebration in Boston. And as you know, thousands of people come to the city to support the marathon, and kids and families and grandparents are all out and about. And yeah, it's, a time of big festivity in Boston.
I'm told, by the way, that it's also a public school observance in Wisconsin. They closed the schools in Wisconsin, according to what I've just been told, for Patriots Day, even though maybe they don't have the rest of the big festivities that acknowledge the beginning of the Revolutionary War in Massachusetts. Julie and Glenn Ridge, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you so much for the opportunity to speak. And my heart, of course, is broken thinking of this awful tragedy and the people who've lost life and limb. I was there from Glen Ridge with my son, who was a patient partner with the Genzyme National Organization for Rare Disorder Runners. These were runners who were running to raise awareness of rare diseases, and each one was paired with a patient with a rare disease. And we were at the midpoint of the race in Wellesley, cheering on our runners. And I was just, I've had nothing to do with marathons in my life, and I was so just sort of transfixed by the fact that there were thousands and thousands of runners running for charity. I think maybe the majority of the runners there were running for charity. And there were runners, there were disabled runners who were in their wheelchairs. There were runners, blind runners with guides. And there was just so much goodness. And, of course, it's all overshadowed now, but I just want everybody to know that this was a triumph of humanity to see all of those people running for others and giving, through their strength, supporting others. And I just think it's important for everybody to know that.
That's beautifully said, Julie. And, I'm a very regular runner, but I've never run a marathon. But I have friends and family who have, and I've been to the finish line in New York, and of course it's dense with people like it was in Boston. And yet it's a pretty open scene at that point in the race.
Four
hours in with two-thirds of the runners having finished.
Yes.
The serious professional runners have long gone, and it's all families and some medical personnel to help the runners. So what a strange target in that respect.
It is so strange. And my fantasy is that at the midpoint that they all would have just run backward. So that,
completed 26 miles, but not have to pass that. That's a wonderful.
And everyone would have been safe.
It's a wonderful dream. Unfortunately, just a dream. But Julie, thank you for a great call. Allison Terry from the Christian Science Monitor in Boston. I heard one race official last night say the Boston Marathon will, of course, go on in future years, but it's been changed forever. And again, in a way, what a strange place for a terrorist attack. Runners run as individuals. The crowd is dispersed along the route. It's not like a stadium where you could kill hundreds of people. The death toll so far is only 3, though many of the injuries are gruesome and serious. But the attacker could have created much more carnage just leaving a bomb on a subway car. So why the marathon finish line, do you think?
That is an interesting question, and it's definitely something we were grappling with in the newsroom yesterday. Why this target? Why at that time? These are questions we're still trying to figure out. For me personally, I think it's just been really important, like the caller said, to realize that marathons are a triumph of human spirit, and for runners, that's individually. And I think for Boston, it's become a triumph of humanity collectively, and how the responders are dealing with people and neighbors are opening their homes to runners who might not have somewhere to go or something to eat. And so, you can't explain evil, or you can't explain terrorism in a way that I think makes sense, but you have to really look at how people respond to tragedy and how people are lifting themselves up and lifting each other up.
And the extra tragic twist that a number of the injured appear to have lost their legs since the blast was so low to the ground. So an attack at a marathon that takes people's legs, it's just an extra dose of horribleness. Mamadou in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling.
Yes, hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. My heart goes to all the people who are injured. I'm a long-distance runner. I did the New York City marathon twice. And the only reason why I did not do Boston, because for Boston, you got to run under 3 hours. So I finished like 3 hours and 15 minutes. So I ended up signing up for Chicago. So,
lucky you.
But my thing is, I'm kind of speechless, Brian, because like somebody said, I'm doing this to raise money for kids in Senegal, actually. But having to face this kind of fear, like definitely in my next marathon, I don't think I will have my family at the finish line. Mm. It doesn't mean that I'm going to stop running. I'm still going to run, but we have to be cognizant to the fact that there are bad people out there. So.
That's so sad if it's going to make you change your behavior and your family's behavior in that way. Of course, whatever kind of thing is attacked once becomes the most well-defended place in America in the future. So I would guess not to, put you and your family in any or suggest you put yourselves in any uncomfortable position. Probably that's going to be the safest place to be, since everybody's going to have their eyes on it.
Exactly.
But Mamadou, thank you very much, and
thank you, Brian, for
sharing your heartfelt feelings. Do you know anything, Allison, about this report of a Saudi national being questioned, a man reportedly here on a student visa with... Some reports are saying burns to his hands, which possibly could indicate an explosion as he was tending to an explosive device. Of course, everyone was running from the blast. He was running from the blast. Has his suspicion been put to rest?
From what I understand, it has. I believe he was at the scene and detained temporarily, but the police and the FBI have continually said that they have no one in question or no one in custody right now that they are suspecting. And I think part of that also may have been that people saw that man, and I had read one report that said he had been attacked, so people automatically assumed that because he was Arab-looking that he might have had something to do with it. And so,
and we've made that mistake before.
Right, and so... I think, like the police and the FBI have been urging, just people need to be patient and wait for more facts to unfold. I know the police and FBI are interviewing people in the hospitals, trying to get to those who are closest to the blast, because they think they'll have the most information if they saw anything suspicious. There have been reports about a video that caught pictures of a man with a backpack who may have looked suspicious, but, I mean... Everyone had a backpack down there, so it's still a lot of information to wade through, a lot of pictures to go through, a lot of video footage to go through.
I want to play one clip from a news conference that just took place with officials of Massachusetts General Hospital, and this hospital official is talking about the nature of the wounds from the nature of the materials that caused the wounds.
Because of the consistency of the fragments, most of them are pellets. Some of them are nail-like. So I think it's unlikely that they would be so consistent if they were pulled up from the environment.
And the point of that clip is that there may have been stuff in the bombs. I guess that's what makes – that's what they call shrapnel, right? Stuff you put in a bomb that explodes rather than injuries sustained from environmental elements, things from just an explosion causing things to fly around and hit people, right?
Right. And, yeah, I've heard reports that people have seen pellets on the street around the area, and a lot of the wounds we're hearing about were shrapnel, and some people – I believe they found, or they believe the bomb was put in a trash can, and they think that the explosion may have caused a trash can to explode, and so all the metal fragments from the trash receptacle obviously would turn into shrapnel as well.
Right, and to the extent that things were placed in the bomb, ball bearings, some people have said, or anything else, it just confirms the intentionality to kill and injure people. Well, Allison Terry, reporter for the Christian Science Monitor in Boston, thank you for giving us a few minutes. I appreciate it a lot.
Right. Thank you.
More coverage as the program continues today. But coming up next, Jeffrey Gilmore, creative director of the Tribeca Film Festival, a festival born of a terrorist attack. And this year's edition opens in Lower Manhattan today. Stay with us. I'm going to have to cut you off now and go to President Obama. Thank you very much for having this conversation.
I really appreciate it.
Secretary Napolitano and my counterterrorism and Homeland Security advisor, Lisa Monaco, on the attacks in Boston. We continue to mobilize and deploy all appropriate law enforcement resources to protect our citizens and investigate and to respond to this attack. Obviously, our first thoughts this morning are with the victims, their families, and the city of Boston. We know that two explosions gravely wounded dozens of Americans and took the lives of others, including a 8-year-old boy. This was a heinous and cowardly act, and given what we now know about what took place, the FBI is investigating it as an act of terrorism. Anytime bombs are used to target innocent civilians, it is an act of terror. What we don't yet know, however, is who carried out this attack or why, whether it was planned and executed by a terrorist organization, foreign or domestic, or was the act of a malevolent individual. That's what we don't yet know, and clearly we're at the beginning of our investigation. It will take time to follow every lead and determine what happened, but we will find out. We will find whoever harmed our citizens, and we will bring them to justice. We also know this. The American people refuse to be terrorized, because what the world saw yesterday in the aftermath of the explosions were stories of heroism and kindness and generosity and love. Exhausted runners who kept running to the nearest hospital to get blood, and those who stayed to tend to the wounded, some tearing off their own clothes to make tourniquets, the first responders who ran into the chaos to save lives, the men and women who are still treating the wounded at some of the best hospitals in the world, and the medical students who hurried to help, saying, "When we heard, we all came in." The priests who opened their churches and ministered to the hurt and the fearful, and the good people of Boston who opened their homes to the victims of this attack and those shaken by it. So if you want to know who we are, what America is, how we respond to evil, that's it. Selflessly, compassionately, unafraid. In the coming days, we will pursue every effort to get to the bottom of what happened, and we will continue to remain vigilant. I've directed my administration to take appropriate security measures to protect the American people, and this is a good time for all of us to remember that we all have a part to play in alerting authorities if you see something suspicious. Speak up. I have extraordinary confidence in the men and women of the FBI, the Boston Police Department, and the other agencies that responded so heroically and effectively in the aftermath of yesterday's events. I'm very grateful for the leadership of Governor Patrick and Mayor Menino, And I know that even as we protect our people and aggressively pursue this investigation, the people of Boston will continue to respond in the same proud and heroic way that they have thus far. And their fellow Americans will be right there with them. Thank you very much. And you can expect further briefings from our law enforcement officials as the day goes on. When we have more details, they will be disclosed. What I've indicated to you is what we know now. We know it was bombs that were set off. We know that, obviously, they did some severe damage. We do not know who did them. We do not know whether this is an act of an organization or an individual or individuals. We don't have a sense of motive yet. So everything else at this point is speculation. But as we receive more information, as the FBI has more information, as our counterterrorism teams have more information, we will make sure to keep you and the American people posted. All right? Thank you very much, everybody.
President Obama speaking live at the White House. Brian Lehrer on WNYC will continue in a minute. WNYC and continuing our coverage of the aftermath of the Boston Marathon attack. Joining us now, Devlin Barrett, Wall Street Journal reporter in Boston, and Ron Agrella from Boston.com. Devlin and Ron, thank you very much for joining us.
Hey,
thank
how are you,
Brian?
I appreciate you giving us New Yorkers a few minutes here today. And listeners, our phones are going to be open again now. Who was running in the marathon yesterday? Are you listening? We know hundreds of people from New York and New Jersey and Southern Connecticut, this portion of Southern Connecticut, were running. Please call in and share your experiences, and you can talk about your feelings today, too. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And any people from our region who just want to express solidarity with the people of Boston or anything else you want to say or to ask these two reporters who we now have who are covering the details, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Devlin, first on the president's statement that we just heard. He came out for, you know, just a brief minute and
right.
made this statement, really speaking about, I guess, the who America is. You know, he had that defiant mm-hmm. look of somebody whose community has just been attacked and wanted to tell the perpetrators that we're not going to take it and we're not going to be cowed. He referred to responding to evil. And how do Americans respond to evil? He said we're compassionate, selfless, unafraid. And notably, he did use the word terror to describe the attack this morning, which he avoided last night. Why the difference, do you think?
Well, I think, and just so we're clear, I'm in D.C. like the president.
Right.
But
sorry.
Just so we're clear, I think he used the word terror this time because it seems to come up now as a question afterward. Well, why don't you say terror right away? And I think, simply put, government officials feel like they don't know enough about the motive behind an incident like this in the first hours to just label it one thing, and they don't want to get ahead of the FBI and then have the FBI basically come out and say, actually, we think it's this. I mean, look, any normal human being would look at two explosions going on in a public crowded place and say, whatever the reason, that's terror. And I think that's, frankly, where most government officials are on it, too. I think they also have some certain legal obligations, certain investigatory obligations. They don't want to close off any possibilities because they don't want to overlook any evidence that might point them to the culprit. But if you talk to anyone involved in this, they all understand what they're investigating. They all understand the stakes. And frankly, their biggest concern is that, as far as they know, the person who did this is still out there.
Person who did this is still out there. Ron Agrella from Boston.com. Our officials from the FBI, which I guess has taken the lead in this investigation, or people from the city or state, given any indication to the people of the Boston area that they may be in ongoing danger from anybody who's still on the loose after perpetrating this attack?
There has been no indication of danger, but I can tell you the mood in the city is probably cautiously guarded. The city, it feels like a less vibrant place today than obviously it did yesterday, and comparing it to the past. You know, people are being careful, and, you know, we've learned so many times that in a terrorist attack, you know, you can never be sure if it is an organized group, something like an Al-Qaeda, or if it be the work of one lone person who is just trying to make a statement. And at this point, it really seems too early to tell.
Is there any history of previous attacks on Patriots Day, Ron?
No, Patriots Day is a pretty quiet holiday here. Most state officials, state workers take the day off, but most people who work in the private sector actually do work. But what Patriots Day is known for is the Boston Marathon, and we have tens of thousands of people line this 26-mile route from Hopkinton all the way into Boston, and it's clear that this was targeted right at the finish line, where there would be a lot of spectators, a lot of cameras, and a lot of people who would record what happened. And it was just, it was a horrific scene.
Let's take a phone call from someone saying she was an eyewitness. Here's Nadira, who is in Elizabeth here in New Jersey. Nadira, thank you for calling. You're on WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Good morning to everyone. Yes, I was there with my family. We're waiting for my sister to finish. She was about 0.8 to 1.5 miles away. We were cheering everyone on, and we were kind of further back from the railing. We were, like, to the right and in front of where the first bomb went off. We were cheering. The music was playing. We came up to the railing after the family left, and, you know, their person finished. We were cheering everybody on, and literally out of nowhere, it sounded like a cannon, like a live cannon. It's all the only thing I can think that it sounded like. And it felt like a blast, just like behind us. And we were just like, for a split second, you just kind of blacked out, like in shock, like, what is this? You know, you just start freaking out, like, what is this? Is this part of the celebration? Then you realize, okay, this is not part of the celebration. We need to move. And at that point, my sister started screaming, and we just started running to our right, and that's when the second blast. My other sister was coming towards us with her boyfriend, and the second blast went off, and we just started, like, to push, and just, I was just yelling, like, get out the way. Everybody just get out and move.
Was it?
We didn't know where to run to or anything. It was just like, I knew not to look back. I knew just to keep going and moving.
Before the second, Nadira, before the second blast, mm-hmm. were you already seeing people hurt, or was it just the sound of the explosion that caused you and your family to run?
For me, it was the sound. I didn't look back. My sister looked back, and she saw some injured people. I did not look back.
Mm-hmm.
I just kept going to my right, and to my right was where the second blast, and my other sister was happening to be coming towards us because we were supposed to be meeting up and waiting for my younger sister who was running in the race. But obviously she didn't get to finish. But that's not important now. I mean, it is in the bigger, you know, scope of things, but
I'm curious, though, about your sister who was running.
Mm-hmm.
How was she redirected, and how did she wind up meeting up with you?
Okay, she was stopped. She was stopped within, I guess, seconds to a minute. She was stopped because her iPhone had gone dead. I gave her my Nano because I knew that was going to happen. And I said, take my Nano before she started running. I said, take my Nano because I know your daughter was going to go dead. It had already gone dead at the 20-mile mark. So we couldn't call her, obviously. And she was held there with the other runners. And then they were held there for like 45 minutes plus, and then put on a bus to go back to the area. And then that she finally made her way to the hotel at 4:30.
So a good job by officials of rounding everybody up who was still running and having you reunite.
Yes, it was a very good job by the officials. Like, there were officials everywhere. One thing I can say, like, they just rushed right there and pushed, made sure everybody got to safety, you know, who was able to get to safety, who wasn't injured.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so
I'm glad nobody in your family was injured, and I hope you're recovering from this experience all right today. And thank you for sharing it with us. I really appreciate it.
All the best.
To you,
thank
too.
You.
Anybody else? 212-433-WNYC, if you were there. Or if you have a question or a comment for our guests, Ron Agrella from Boston.com and Devlin Barrett from The Wall Street Journal. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Devlin, you have a piece in the journal that's headlined, Tripwires Can Spot Would-Be Bombers. And it says, for years, federal agents have asked businesses that sell materials useful in making bombs to alert authorities to any suspicious orders. Do you think that could have come into play in this case?
It could have. They're still trying to figure out exactly how this bomb worked. There's a couple of immediate initial impressions that investigators have. One is just that the sound of the bomb, the way it looked on video, and how it smelled afterward are suggestive of a black powder-based explosion. And when black powder, you're generally talking about, you know, stuff that's used to make bullets and that kind of thing. It's just an impression that it's not something that has been, you know, nailed down in a lab as yet, as far as we know. But that would be telling because it's a bit harder for officials to use the tripwire program on black powder just because it's a common thing purchased by people who, you know, make their own ammunition. The tripwire program has evolved over the years, especially after the McVeigh bombing of Oklahoma City in the 90s, and then the chemical attempts at bombings you saw in New York and elsewhere in the last decade. And what they try and do is they try and get the people who sell and distribute these types of materials, mostly chemicals, to alert the FBI when they get a customer that just doesn't look or sound right. And by look or sound right, I mean ordering something without having a clear commercial or business purpose for it. So, for example, in 2011, they ended up getting on the trail of a young man in Texas who had ordered $430 worth of chemicals from a company, and the company just thought, this doesn't seem right. There's no reason this person would be buying these chemicals. And they alerted the FBI, and the FBI ended up doing an investigation and finding all sorts of writings in his apartment about wanting to conduct attacks in the U.S., and he ended up pleading guilty last year. Mm-hmm. So the Tripwire program definitely does work. And you see it in the Faisal Shahzad Times Square bombing as well.
When he tried to detonate that car bomb in Times Square a few years ago, you remind us in your article he intentionally worked with less powerful substances,
right,
that he thought the tripwire program wouldn't spot, but they caught him anyway?
Right. His thinking was, I can't buy the components of my bomb recipe that my Pakistani handlers have given me, because those sellers will tell the FBI that I've bought those things. So he bought lesser versions of each thing. That's bad in the sense that it doesn't appear that the tripwire, that he, you know, touched any of the tripwires that the FBI had in place. But it's great in the sense that the bomb he ultimately built was not effective. It didn't go off properly. It burned a little. It caused smoke, certainly, and was very scary.
Mm-hmm.
But the investigators in that case were left with a huge car full of evidence. In this case, it's going to be much more difficult, at least on the surface, because you have to examine all these microscopic fragments and try and piece together what the bomb was made of.
Ron Agrella from Boston.com. There was that report of investigators entering an apartment in Revere outside Boston and leaving with bags. Any more detail on that?
What we know right now, Brian, is that the resident in that apartment was of Saudi Arabian descent, but little is known about what was actually seized. Boston.com and the Boston Globe did talk to the man's roommate, who, denies any involvement, said it would be out of character for this person to commit such an act, but the investigation is very much ongoing. Police are following up on leads across the city, as far as we know, but to date, nothing. I will say about the bombs themselves, it appears that the bombs were placed in such a way as to do the most amount of physical harm to someone's lower extremities. And one of the victims, as you know, was an 8-year-old child, and children being shorter and already more susceptible to injury than adults, this poor child who had come out to watch his father run, he was with his mother and his sister at the time of the explosion, succumbed to his injuries.
Indeed. But, Ron, you were just describing intentionality to something that I was assuming was a coincidence, which is that many of the injuries were leg injuries because of the placement of these explosives on the ground or near the ground. I was assuming that was a kind of a perverse coincidence that at a marathon, so many of the injuries would be to people's legs and even getting their legs blown off. Are you saying the evidence indicates that that was their intent?
I think it's too early to say for sure. I will tell you from the people that we had on the scene and from what the local hospitals are reporting, a lot of the injuries were to the lower extremities. So whether it was specifically intended just for that area of the human body, it remains to be determined, but most of the significant injuries appear to be to that area. And then one of the bombs, at least, doctors did report that pellets, nails, other debris had been pulled from the patients.
All right, let's take a phone call. Rich in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Rich.
Hi, Brian. Thank you. My big curiosity is the why, as comparable as it is to the who. Why Boston? Because it doesn't have the financial significance as New York, if I may speak frankly. It certainly doesn't have the federal significance that Washington, D.C. or New York has. It doesn't have the Jewish attachment to Israel or the Middle East at a place like New York has. And that's my greatest curiosity. And I would also like to tell the Boston and the Massachusetts people that as a loyal Yankee fan, the rivalry ends here and now, and today we are all Americans, and that they have our hearts.
Nicely said, Rich. Thank you very much. And I'll add the rivalry between the Knicks and the Celtics with the playoffs starting on Saturday. But, Ron, I'm sure a lot of New Yorkers thinking that we are ground zero for all the reasons that he stated are wondering today why Boston.
Well, that's a very good question. And I'll tell you, there is no Yankees-Red Sox rivalry today here in Boston. The Boston Marathon is a huge international event. We have runners from all over the world coming to Boston. The hotels are filled with people from across the country and around the world during this event. So just speculating without any obvious inside knowledge, but you know, if you were going to commit an act, a terrorist act, you have a very large audience right now in the Boston area.
Yeah, and I would just add to that that part of what makes the Boston Marathon an attractive target is just the massive media presence that's right there. I think it's, in my mind, it's not going to end up being a coincidence that this was done at the finish line where you have the most media presence, the most cameras. What counterterrorism people tell you all the time is that having a media component to an attack is a huge part of the thinking that goes into people who do these kind of attacks. And while that's a horrible thing, because obviously you saw the videos that went around like wildfire yesterday, that's part of the purpose of doing that. And Boston, the marathon, just presented a very good target in media terms.
And you wonder if the perpetrator thought it through to the degree that so many people in the stands at the finish line would have their cell phone cameras or some other kind of cameras trained on the very spot to catch their loved ones coming through. And so there would have been video. I guess that media component could explain why they went for this spot where only a few people were killed and, of course, many injured, than, say, on a subway car anywhere in the city where they could have had a lot more death.
I think that's an excellent point. And what is very interesting about this time that we live in is our authorities right now are actually asking for people in the area to supply them with phone video, photos, anything that they can look at within the area of the bombing. And you know, there's a plea out there. We've even had reports here that as
some people are flying out of Logan International Airport that authorities have asked if they were at that location during the time and if they would mind sharing photos. That's unconfirmed right now, but we are checking into it.
Anna in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Anna.
Oh, hi there. I was wondering if anybody had given thought to whether maybe New York City was the original target with the marathon, but that our marathon was canceled because of Hurricane Sandy.
Wow. Well,
I know it's come up in sort of casual conversation among people who are looking at this, but I think the simple fact is they really don't have any intel, as counterterrorism people would describe it, to tell them one way or the other. I know it's been sort of a water cooler talk for some of the people who work with this, but the simple fact is because they don't know a who and they don't know a why, from their point of view, it's impossible to answer questions like that at this stage.
Ron, what are you hearing from the hospitals? How are they equipped to treat all the people who were brought in? From what I could tell watching the coverage hour after hour yesterday, it seemed like the hospitals that were most directly impacted were incredibly organized and prepared and didn't feel like they had a shortage of doctors and materials. Is that your impression?
That's exactly right. The local hospitals here train routinely for mass casualty incidents, and most of the doctors that we talked to said that they were in place. The system was in place. It operated the way it should. Fortunately or unfortunately, because of the time of day, the hospitals were fully staffed, unlike, you know, perhaps on a weekend or very late at night where there may be less staffing. They were at full staff, so they were able to mobilize medical professionals very quickly and potentially saved a lot of lives because of it.
Devlin, are the investigators who you're reporting on looking seriously at all at the date, April 15th, tax day, April 16th, I mean, not to mention Patriots Day, which, you know, commemorates the start of the Revolutionary War, but April 15th, tax day, April 16th was the Virginia Tech shooting, if I'm not mistaken. April 19th, of course, we all know there was the Timothy McVeigh Oklahoma City bombing, which was an anniversary attack after the government's Waco invasion before that. So, I mean, there is this kind of crazy week of the year, which has now become for the history books even crazier.
Yeah, and you know, in my conversation with law enforcement officials, they will always say that they're sort of cognizant of every time April rolls around. They're aware of it, and they sort of think about it a little bit because they know that there is among the sort of really out there anti-government types, there is an attraction to those April anniversaries. But the reality is, at this stage, the calendar is just the calendar. By itself, it doesn't really tell you very much.
Right.
I think if you can pair the calendar up with something, then it starts to be meaningful.
And we have to leave it there, I'm sorry to say, because we are out of time. Devlin Barrett, Wall Street Journal reporter in Washington. Ron Agrella, Boston.com reporter in Boston. Thank you both very much for giving us some time.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks.
And thanks to all of you who called. Our coverage will continue through the day on WNYC. We'll be streaming at 12:30, Mayor Bloomberg's news conference, and you can listen to the Leonard Lopate Show as usual coming up next here on the radio.